Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Tuesday. It's June 10th. Currently 60 degrees, both in Park City and Heber City. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Happy Tuesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your Tuesday forecast for the Wasatch Back. As we go throughout the day, looking at plenty of sunshine. We'll call it mostly sunny skies as those temperatures will be heating up across the area. High temperatures in Park City will climb into the lower 80s as we go throughout the afternoon. Our friends in the Heber Valley look for high temperatures to climb into the upper 80s out there, closing in on 90 degrees. Again, with mostly sunny skies, it's going to be a pretty warm day out there. Now, as we go into your Wednesday, we're going to track a small change in the forecast as we've got a weak disturbance that's going to be moving by primarily to our north, but it'll bring us a few more clouds. And as we start off with temperatures in the low 50s, we'll climb into the low to mid 80s for highs in Park City, with highs in the upper 80s to right around 90 in the Heber Valley again. But we'll introduce a chance, about a 20% chance, of a couple of isolated storms developing during the afternoon hours as that disturbance moves by. Because of the heat and the humidity that we have in place, one or two of those storms, if they do develop, could produce some heavy downpours, frequent lightning, and maybe some gusty winds. We could have an isolated strong to severe storm. So we'll watch that for you. But again, it will be very isolated in nature. Otherwise, we'll dry things back out by your Thursday. Temperatures will be starting out with temperatures climbing from the 50s into the low 80s in Park City. We'll be near 90 in the Heber Valley, and we will warm up even more as we get towards your Friday into the weekend. Look for lots of sunshine for our upcoming weekend. It is going to be hot Friday, with highs in the mid 80s in Park City, low to mid 90s in the Heber Valley. We'll be into the mid 90s for highs in the Heber Valley on Saturday, and we're looking at high temperatures in the upper 80s as we get towards Park City on your Saturday. And for your Father's Day Sunday, oh, the heat will be on, folks. We're talking temperatures starting off around the 50s, but we'll climb into the upper 80s in Park City for highs on Father's Day. And for the Heber Valley, we're looking at those high temperatures climbing into the mid 90s across the area. We stay warm heading into the beginning of next week. That's your latest forecast from the ABC Forecast Center. I'm meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be checking in with Summit County Manager Shane Scott. We'll take a look at the agenda for Wednesday's County Council meeting. Later on, Mountain Town Music Executive Director Brian Richards with a preview of the free music throughout Summit County happening this summer. And finally, the Executive Director of the Christian Center of Park City, Steve Richardson, with an update on some of the ongoing programs the organization is offering. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Taking a look at some local news now, the Summit County Council plans to award the Klein-Dolly development bid to a local firm, Columbus Pacific, this week. KPCW's Connor Thomas has more on what the company is proposing next to Jeremy Ranch Elementary School.
A Summit County staff report indicates the council will choose Columbus Pacific Development for the project on the county-owned Klein-Dolly property at its meeting June 11th. Six companies presented their visions for the 30-acre site adjacent to Jeremy Ranch Elementary May 21st, and Summit County Manager Shane Scott says council members reached a consensus in closed-door deliberations after the public presentations. Choosing one is not the same as approving the development. The council says it'll negotiate a public-private partnership with the company it chooses. Columbus Pacific included a handful of other organizations in its bid for the Klein-Dolly contract, including Basin Recreation. The overall plan Columbus Pacific partner Tony Tyler presented is a grid-like single-family neighborhood with a new recreation field house in the center. Basin Rec's new field house could have a climbing gym and pool.
We're looking through Snyderville Basin Recreation District's proposal for Silver Creek Village, where they had designed, you know, a previous facility in that location with another field house, and for various reasons it wasn't really viable in that spot. And so the idea of bringing them kind of into the fold here and creating, you know, a community-wide benefit from a recreation perspective, I think was unbelievably appealing to us.
Mountainlands Community Housing Trust and Habitat for Humanity of Summit and Wasatch Counties would build the housing. There would be 172 units overall, 100 single-bedroom apartments, and 72 for-sale single-family homes. All would be reserved for local workers making anywhere from 30 to 150% of the county's median income. Tyler says Columbus Pacific would be the, quote, backstop for the affordable housing developers.
Our goal in this would be to develop all the infrastructure, flat all the lots, initially transfer all the lots to our two partners, and then give them the flexibility long term, you know, to build over their own course of time and their own schedule. and with their own financing mechanisms as well.
Tyler acknowledged everything is subject to negotiation with the council. He adds the affordability of those units relies on the county donating the Klein Dolly land to Columbus Pacific.
We would then in turn subdivide that land, transfer 15 acres to Basin Rec to let them start their process to, you know, to bond for a new facility.
All the firms bidding for the Klein Dolly deal were required to incorporate a new Park City Fire District station into their plans. Just over an acre would then go back to the fire district for its new station, replacing the old one on Kilby Road. Columbus Pacific has previously developed buildings in Canyons Village, including the Pendry Park City Hotel and Slopeside Village dorms for mountain employees. It has developed student housing for universities around the U.S. as well. The company has a separate application pending with the county to develop housing and commercial space, including a grocer in Silver Creek Estates. Summit County, Columbus Pacific, Basin Rec, Mountain Lands, and Habitat for Humanity are financial supporters of KPCW. I'm Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
The Summit County Council meets tomorrow at the County Courthouse in Colville. In the studio with a preview, Summit County Manager Shane Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So during work session, a discussion regarding Summit County and the Recycle Utah partnership. So what's the latest here?
Well, we've been meeting with Recycle Utah on a quite a frequent basis, probably even likely before I arrived, in an effort to have a contingency plan once Recycle Utah does vacate their current location there in Park City. At the same time, we're working on a plan to increase our recycling in the county. This is a solid waste is a county responsibility, and we know that, and we take that very seriously. Through this process of having a meeting with Recycle Utah regularly, we've offered a piece of property where they could continue their current operations. And it was my understanding that they weren't interested in doing that. At the same time, there have been other members of Recycle Utah leadership that have met with Summit County Council members and have actually expressed an interest in continuing operations. So we've kind of heard some differing messages. This kind of shotgun approach to communication hasn't been working really well right now. So this agenda item is an effort to get everybody in one room. And, if Recycle Utah would like to continue operations on Gilmore or somewhere else, we would like to be a partner with them. And if they're don't want to continue operations, we want to step up as an organization and fill that void. We just need to know which one of those two they're going to do. So if we can get everybody in the same room, that old game gossip where everybody, one person tells another person tells another person, that's kind of what's happening here, and it's not working well for us. So we just want to get the true story.
Okay, so who are the council members hearing from? Board of Trustees?
Yes, I think several of them have met with members of the board. We've been working with mostly the staff, but sometimes members of the board as well. So it's just various people meeting with various people, and we want to just get everybody in the same room.
Okay. So as you mentioned, the county has offered, I think, 4 acres in that Gilmore parcel there off of US 40?
Yes. It's we call it Lot 4. We think it's valued around $7 million. And we thought that was a good, let me give the credit to Park City as well. This is a Park City Summit County effort. This would be an offer from both of us in an effort to get to continue operations there for Recycle Utah.
Right, we've heard a price tag of up to $25 million. Was that including land costs?
It was. That was. Okay. But that $25 million was not to continue the operations they currently do now. That was ramping up operations. That was more of a regional facility that would do additional things. In fact, that facility that they were thinking about, we thought would not be a good fit for the Gilmore. The Gilmore is more. It's 4 acres. It does have some challenges when it comes to topography. So we do think that that Lot 4 would be a great place for them to continue the operations they do now. I think they're on 0.4 acres right now, so it would be much bigger than that. But it does have some challenges. It wouldn't be a good regional facility. It'd be a good collection facility like they're doing right now.
All right. So is that what you're hearing, the criticism? Is that it's too small? It's not thinking big enough?
Yeah, I think that's true. And let's give them some credit. They've pointed out and been very... they've given a lot of attention to this issue, and it's an issue that we need to focus more attention on, and we want to. As an organization, we want to step up. We do recycling. Recycle Utah is not the only recycler in this community. We do recycling countywide, but we need to do more. And maybe that is regional facilities like they're operating now in different parts of the county. We're taking a county overview of this, obviously not just in the city, but we think that one that spot could be a great starting place. And the clock's ticking. This is next summer. We've got to do something. So we're ready to pivot. But we just need to know which way.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear from Wasatch County Manager Dustin Graybaugh that Wasatch County residents don't even get curbside pickup unless they hire a kind of a third-party business. But again, the fact that there is no regional partnership at this point, I mean, should there be? I mean, it sounds like a great opportunity at regionalization.
Well, I think we always look to those. I think High Valley Trends is a good example of that as well. I think the priorities in Summit County are different than the priorities in Wasatch County. Wasatch County is functioning much more like a local government in other parts of Utah. We do a lot more with recycling up here in Summit County. It's something that our populace demands, and we appreciate that, and we want to step up and meet that demand. But we would love to partner with Recycle Utah, with Wasatch County in meeting this demand. But we do need them to come to the table with some funding, and with a desire to really provide recycling. I heard that same interview you're mentioning, and I kind of got the impression that this was a priority for Wasatch County, but a much lower priority than it is in Summit County.
Hmm. All right, and then of course the Summit County Council meets regionally with Wasatch County as well as with Park City. When's that next joint meeting?
We have a joint meeting with Park City coming up quite soon, in the next couple of weeks. I think it's the end of this month. The next regional convening, Sarah, who was the Park City Assistant City Manager, kind of had that meeting up, and I wonder if her retirement has set that back a little bit. But I don't know that that's on the calendar, but I'd have to check.
Okay. Let's see. Also during work session, an update from the Summit County Districting Commission from committee member Melina Stevens. Are any staff members attending these commission meetings, or is it just the districting commission?
No one is officially attending these districting committee meetings, except for Eve First. She is actually a non-voting member of the committee, and she'll be very important in how this rolls out with voting districts and the maps, and then also I think it's her responsibility to actually assign the district, the county council members to the district. So besides her, I believe nobody else is, but I'll be there. I'm very anxious to see how this plays out, and as you probably are not surprised to hear, Melina was appointed her as the unincorporated county member of this districting commission, and she is also the chair. So she's taking this role very seriously, has hit the ground running, has contacted the mayors, is trying to get dates on the calendar. I think they wanted to meet twice a month through the summer, which is going to be a challenge getting everybody's schedules to line up. But we've got time. We've got to set this commission and get these districts put together.
Okay, so are the meetings that the commission is holding open to the public?
Yes, they will. They will be, and we plan on making them available on Zoom as well.
Okay, and when do we have to have some kind of final plan?
I think it needs to be adopted by the council on October 1st. So it would probably be in the end of September.
All right. And will we have public hearings prior to that, or it just happens before the county?
There is one public hearing required of the council. There's no public hearings required of the districting commission, but which was kind of unfortunate in my estimation, because the council really has no say in these districts. They will have to accept whatever comes out of the commission. So we hear from the public, I don't like this district. It doesn't really matter. So I wish that they were having more of a public hearing at the commission level, but they aren't required to do that.
So it's really coming down to a numbers game, right? Right? I mean, you got to have basically even populations in each district?
Yes, and I guess in my estimation, I wouldn't think there is a lot of variety in these districts. They do also need to follow the voting district lines. You need to, just because of, by constitutionally for representation, you have to have similar, like for example, Park City, we can't just take the city and carve it up into five different, and take little pieces of it and put it in all five districts. So it's gonna have to be some method to the madness here, and I believe that, but That being said, there's probably a lot of, I'm sure that those involved in this have looked at this already very carefully and will have a lot to say there those first few meetings.
Okay. Then later on, a discussion on Mountain Regional's Water Service District's treatment plant expansion. We're talking about a $43 million project. Can you tell us what's happening?
Well, it's an expansion, and I looked through the slides. I had just a very brief conversation with Andy about this, so I'm as anxious as anybody to hear about this. I did know this was coming. I'm glad you said 43 and not 61 million, because the entire bond is 61 million, but 18 million of that is a refund of existing a loan. So it's $43 million. If you look at the slides that they put together for the agenda item, there's some very technical slides there in the middle of what they're trying to do. So, and then of course the next item is there. We're expanding service into another parcel, so they're always continuing to grow as well. But I don't know a lot about this specific expansion, but I'm interested in hearing.
Okay, good time to bring in Andy then.
That's right.
Let me see. But they are planning to use a WIFIA loan. What's this?
It's a federal. I'm trying to remember what WIFIA stands for. I can't remember off the top of my head, but there were some real advantages to it. In fact, they had one slide there of why they're using the WIFIA loan, and it wasn't just interest rates, and it was, I think, some flexibility in payments as well.
All right. Any idea what it means for water rates going forward?
I don't know. I don't know, and I don't remember that being addressed there in the slides.
Okay. And, of course, the council plans to approve, well, or at least discuss, a contract with Columbia Pacific to develop the Klein-Dolly property. Why did this RFP stand out?
Well, first of all, it was very challenging to stand out at all. If you follow those presentations at council a couple of council meetings ago, they were very impressive. We had all six come before us. I think we could have probably gone with any of those proposals. I think a key thing that I would like to emphasize is, in negotiating, this is first of all we're deciding with whom we will negotiate. We haven't reached any kind of consensus yet with Columbus Pacific. Also, while we liked the elements in their plan, there's a lot to do here. There's going to be a lot of changes. I think they provided a lot of a great mix of housing, community benefits, open space. So there were some really exciting things. I think they had 172 deed restricted affordable units of varying AMIs. But there's still so much to go through, and I think this will follow a similar process that Dakota Pacific did, where a subcommittee of council members, staff, key staff, will meet with this developer once we come to some kind of an agreement on how to operate going forward, and we'll sit down and see what can be here in the Klein-Dolly area.
Now, the affordability of the housing units relies on the county donating that property to Columbus Pacific. Is that the intention here?
Well, again, there's probably a lot of negotiation here, and if you know some of my council members, you know they're not going to just sit back and just accept that. At the same time, we bought this property in 2017. There's a lot of county initiatives that this property could provide. And I think donating the land was always on the table. We know that that's how we get affordable units is one of two ways. We provide land or we allow for market rate units. And I don't think we intend to allow for any market rate units on this property. So I think there's still some more to discuss there. And we will look to get a return on our investment as well as much as we can. But sometimes that return is deed restricted affordable housing.
And in terms of the best location for a new Basin Rec facility, I mean, we've got an aquatic center across the freeway. So I guess why not look at putting the field house where there isn't already facilities?
Well, I think that there's a lot to go over here, and this hasn't been studied, at least from my perspective. I haven't talked about this at all. But in my conversations with individuals offline, if you think about the numbers of people that go from Jeremy Ranch or from Pine Brook to the field house, I think that would remove a lot of not only not only of how congested and crowded the field house gets, but also traffic. I think we'd cut down a lot of that traffic. A lot of people could probably walk to this facility. So I think depending on who's using the field house, this could be a really good location. It does seem very close. It seems really, I would even say too close at first blush. But at the same time, I think there might be some opportunity there to capture some of the people that are going into the Kimball Junction area that's just making things more congested than they need to be.
Yeah, a lot of moving parts as well, right? Because we've got Basin Rec, we've got the fire district, we've got basically handing over the platted lots to another developer. Any concern because each of these are now responsible then for their own financing?
Well, I think there's a plan in place for all of those. I think this, the reason why Columbus Pacific even involved the Basin Rec was because they saw Basin Rec was trying to build another facility over in the Silver Creek Village area. And that kind of died at the Planning Commission level. So I think they're trying to fill that need. I think Basin Rec is preparing to build a different facility. I know that the fire department is also, they're well funded in the fact that they are being responsible, and they know that they have additional units they need to provide to different areas. So I'm not as worried about that as I am about making sure that we take advantage of this area in taking a lot of county priority boxes.
All right. Let's see. Dakota Pacific, now going to be your decision. How are you feeling about that?
Well, I feel good about it in that it is a administrative process. There is not a lot to... It's not a decision where I look at it and say, this is a terrible idea or this is a good idea. I look at it and say, did they fill out this form correctly? Have they met the standard of Senate Bill 26? And that will be vetted out much more by the Planning Commission than it will be by me. Well, I guess where I wonder if they're... I'm trying to remember the term, and you might have it, and it's where it's not substantially different, something like that. I think there's a... If it's... I think someone's term of substantially different and others might be vastly different. And so is it going to come down to me or the Planning Commission or even our staff to say what is and what is not substantially different? My understanding is that they've submitted something that's very, very, very similar to what was adopted on December 18th by the County Council in a 4-1 vote last year. So we'll have to take a look at it, but I'm not worried about that because of the process we've established.
Right. Well, so it sounds pretty much like a slam dunk then, huh?
I wouldn't say slam dunk, but I would say maybe layup. I think, and again, I haven't looked at this. I'm staying out of it until it hits my desk. I won't even get a chance to look at it. So, but my understanding is that I'm imagining they're not going to bring something vastly different, especially if something different that would be in their favor. I just think they would. They know that wouldn't go well for them. So.
Okay. All right, Shane. Anything else?
Can I just say that I attended my third city tour, and I thought it was outstanding. I wanted to say thanks to Scott and Paige and their whole team at Park City Municipal. It was it was my favorite one, and we had a lot of good, real applicable breakout sessions. I think you had the three members of the class on here last week, and they did a great job of wrapping that up. And I just wanted to thank those involved and thought it was very successful.
Okay, Shane Scott is Summit County Manager. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Leslie. Have a great day.
Well, the weather's perfect for outdoor summer concerts, and they are in full swing. Better yet, a lot of the live music during the summer brought to you for no cost, thanks to Mountain Town Music. In studio with me, with a preview of the summer season, Executive Director of Mountain Town Music, Brian Richards. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Yeah, always exciting to hear about what's to come. How many shows?
A lot.
Do you book for this?
We have so many. I think we're looking at just over 300 free musical performances throughout the summer. We work with tons of community partners to program live music in parks and developments and stages all throughout Summit County.
Yeah, and then in terms of year round, I mean, because you do concerts.
Yeah, it's become a year round organization. Back in the day, we had winters off. I could ski, 75 to 100 days a year. And I think last year I skied like five or six. So yeah, we're a year-round organization. There's free music all of the time, everywhere. You know, when Vail, you know, moved in, they do a lot of on-mountain activations between DJs and live music and bands. So, you know, it's a lively town all year round.
Yeah. How many venues do you have this year?
Oh, we have about 11 or 12 stages that we program. And then, again, we're working with so many community partners to program their music. Like, we're working with Offset to do the music in the park, which kicks off this Friday with Mobius Wave. And so it's really tough to nail down exactly how many venues. There's just so much, and we're involved in so many different things now that, you know, you really got to go to the website to check out the schedule and then like us, because we're doing a lot of social media posts about these sort of one-off events that we're doing.
Okay, so your social media, where should people follow you? Instagram?
Instagram, X, Facebook,
okay,
TikTok. All of them.
Okay. Is there a most popular location? Where do you see the biggest crowds?
You know, that's a good question. I think that it's pretty spread out. You know, now that we are in so many different areas of the county, I think that there's so many opportunities to see live music. So, you know, I think that my favorite's Wooden Shoe Park in Pioa. You know, we just kicked off the summer there on Friday, and I think we had like, you know, 400 or 500 people out there. It was amazing. It was amazing. And it was so great to see. And you've been out there, and it really epitomizes what mountain town music is. You know, we had kids playing on the playground. There was horses running out in the field. The sun was setting over the mountains. And we had the pranksters out there playing in Lush's barbecue. And it was just really, really special. And I just kept walking around going, can this evening get any more perfect? But then you get, you know, a decent crowds out at New Park and Billy Blanco's concert series and Canyons Village. And, you know, the Canyons is doing what's called Forum Fest now, which is a celebration of America, essentially, for the 4th of July, 3rd, 4th, 5th. And so there's free music on the mountain stage for three straight days. And they get, you know, 5,000 to 10,000 people every day.
Yeah. And then I think if, you know, like we see all that development happening out at like Studio Crossing. I mean, is there some kind of amphitheater there?
You know, that's so funny. John and I were just chatting about Studio Crossing because we both live in Park City Heights. It would be really awesome if there was, you know, some sort of amphitheater there. They have not come to me asking to program music, but there are lots of those different developments that pop up that are always looking to add amenities for their particular communities. And that's how Mountain Town Music grew. You know, as Park City was growing and when Mountain Town Stages shifted to Mountain Town Music, we partnered with all of these new developments that were going in that needed to add these amenities in order to get, you know, these developments approved. And so, you know, hopefully as these, you know, developments in Hideout and Studio Crossing, hopefully they will continue to add those amenities and there will be live music programming. That would be super dope.
Okay. How do you decide who plays where?
Oh, that's a good question. It's really very organic. You know, I might be working on booking the Billy Blanco's concert series one day and someone might email me. I'm like, oh, cool, I got July 11th open, so why don't you guys come in and play July 11th? Or, you know, the process, it's difficult and it's organic because there are so many amazing musicians in this area that it's even though we have so much programming, it's still really difficult to keep everybody happy because there are a lot of great bands and it's sometimes a thankless job in that aspect because people get angry with me. And it's like, hey, I'm not holding any grudges. It's just there's a lot of really good bands. And that's the cool thing about Mountain Town Music is that we want to feature as many different bands as we can each particular year. I don't want you going to Pioa and seeing the same band play every single year. I'm not going to go to Pioa this year because X band's playing. It's like, you know, every time you go to one of our venues that you're going to see a different band and really good bands. And so I think that we take a lot of pride in the diversification of the lineup and featuring new bands. I think this Saturday, Sunday at the Silly Market, we have two bands that have never played for us. They're young kids. They're both awesome, and so I look forward to going and seeing them. So it definitely is an organic process about how we figure out who's going to play where.
Yeah. So how does that work, though? I mean, is it that you invite people, or do bands or musicians kind of apply to be considered?
Yeah. At this point, it is. They know that we program a lot of music up here, so people are constantly reaching out to me, and I'm telling bands, I'm like, hey, you have to continue to reach out. You got to email, you got to text, you got to call, because if you're not, then I sort of kind of start to forget about you, because we'll have a lot of bands that are like, yeah, but we were so awesome and everybody loved us at the Silly Market or at Quarry Village and Billy Blanco's, and I'm like, yeah, but everybody says that, and I wasn't out there, and I didn't get a chance to see you, and I haven't heard from you in 2 years. And so, you know, when you're getting hundreds and hundreds of emails every month from bands that want to play, it's really difficult to, you know, kind of, again, I might see, there's certain bands that are in your public, your consciousness, like the Mud Puddles of the world that continue to play. But again, there's so many bands out there that it's, you know, I want to keep things fresh.
Yeah. So the popular Wednesdays in City Park were moved then to Deer Valley. They're kind of a thing of the past. Are those ever going to be resurrected?
You know, that's a good question. I think that it's not that the Wednesday Night Free concerts moved back to the park. You know, we were programming music. We have been programming music in the park for probably the last 10 years. We had Noches de Verano, which is Latino concert series. We had Beethoven in the park. And when we decided to move on from Deer Valley, just because of the pending construction, we simply added a jazz concert series in City Park. So we went from programming, like, I think 14 shows in the park to 21. And so it was never, hey, we moved Deer Valley from Deer Valley to City Park. It was more, we added more shows in City Park. But I do anticipate at some point, once Deer Valley, you know, finalizes that construction, that we will go back to Deer Valley. Right now, we're working with them to program the Silver Lake Lawn. And there are concerts every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at Silver Lake, which is great. You know, there's not a lot of parking. You know, you have to ride your bike or take the bus or possibly pay $5 to ride the lift up. But they have food trucks. There's a stage set up there. Every Saturday, it's bluegrass music. And so, you know, I think with the Deer Valley concert series, it got so big. And it became less about the music and a little bit more about the scene. And that's not who we are as an organization. You know, we are about presenting music in intimate settings so that you can actually listen. We want to showcase those musicians and not necessarily have you talk throughout a show. I mean, so many people at the Deer Valley Concert Series sat at the top of the hill and they didn't even know there was a band. And so, you know, it wasn't what filled my soul as someone who wants to present music. And so it's really awesome. We have maintained a relationship with Deer Valley where we program the music at the Deer Valley Grocery Cafe. And so, yeah, I do think at some point, once that sort of shakes out, that we'll be back at Deer Valley in some capacity. Like, who knows, maybe out at East Village or whatever. We do miss those days and people talk a lot about it, but you know, all good things must pass, as Mr. George Harrison once sang about.
Okay. Those Silver Lake Lawn concerts, 1 o'clock.
Yeah, they're 1 to 4. Okay. Again, there's not parking. There's not a lot of parking. There's paid parking, and it's not cheap. Mm-hmm. But there's a bus that takes you, you know, right up there, and it's a great opportunity to take your family up the chairlift, and they have barbecue up there, and they're actually really cool. You can bring your chairs, you can bring in like a little blanket, but they have picnic tables and cornhole, and they've created a really cool scene. They started it up last year, and the whole series isn't quite on the website yet, but it'll be up on the website in the next, like, I would say by the end of next week. There's a lot of music. It starts, I think, July 4th is the first date that kicks off on.
Okay. And bluegrass, you said, every Saturday, huh?
Bluegrass every Saturday, yep.
Okay. Yeah. Give us an idea of the, I mean, it's very eclectic, I understand that, but anything you're really excited to see?
You know, that's the question that everybody asks, right, is, you know, what's really exciting you? And I don't really have anything that I'm overly excited to see. I just look forward to summer because I start to see people again. I start to get out and experience the all of the live music that's happening. So it's not necessarily that I look forward to seeing any particular band, but I start to look forward to the first night of Pioa, the first night of Noches de Verano, which is next Tuesday. We are out at High Star Ranch. Just so a lot of you guys know, you know, we are doing the High Star Ranch concert series this summer. A lot of people didn't think that was happening, but because the DeGioia Center closed. But we kicked that series off on Thursday, and that's an amazing venue to see music. I don't know if you've been out there, but there's a really great stage that they set up. It's a huge lawn. It's called the Great Lawn. And this year, because DeGioia Center is closed, there's not going to be any food vendors out there. So you can bring your own coolers and you can bring your own picnics and you can have a good time. So really what I look forward to is the first show at every different venue because that's the most well attended and the energies and the vibes are super high and the stoke is pretty big. And so I think that's really what I look forward to is the first show at all these different venues.
Okay, and as you mentioned, the Forum Fest, that's a really big show again.
Big show.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I think you said 3rd, 4th, and 5th.
Yep.
Tell us, you've got March 4th marching band on that Thursday, the 3rd. Yeah,
the March 4th marching band on the 3rd, and if you haven't seen those guys, they are amazing. We actually, we booked them many, many moons ago, probably 10 years or so ago. We started to get really hip to what they were doing, and super fun band. We actually had them march up Main Street one year for the Silly Market. But the cool thing about it is they're playing on the big stage, on the mountain stage, so they can do, you know, the aerialists and the stilts, and they can kind of present their full show. I saw them a few weeks ago at the Commonwealth Room, and it's a small venue, so they can't activate all that they can do. And so they're kicking it off on the 3rd with Nick Parr is opening up that show. They're amazing. On the 4th is, let's see, who's playing on the 4th? The Hog Slop String Band. And who's the country artist that's playing that night?
Cry Wolf?
I can't remember. That's
no.
And then on the 5th is Super Diamond and Neon Velvet. And if you haven't seen Super Diamond, it's amazing. It's a Neil Diamond tribute band. And they'll be playing. And the Forum Fest is really cool. There's fireworks and drone shows and food vendors and kids' activities. The CVMA has done an amazing job of putting that particular event on the map. And so if you're not hip to Forum Fest, I would check it out. And there's a lot of information at forumfest.com. They have a little bit more of all, you know, the overall view of the event. We just have the music that's happening.
Okay. And I mentioned this in the introduction. All of this free music. So I know that you do collect donations during the shows, but how do you pay all the bands?
We do collect, donations. We used to have this chuck-a-buck thing, but now we encourage people to bust out their smart devices and cell phones and Venmo us. So if you're listening right now and you're sitting on your couch, you can certainly shoot us a Venmo at Mountain Town Music. Don't do it while you're driving. We're supported by, you know, the rap tax, the restaurant tax, the Park City Foundation, the Rotary Fund, all of these amazing, grants. We also have a sponsorship. And like I said, we've partnered with a lot of community partners throughout Summit County that help us program music. We just bought a new sound system, an Elacoustic Kiva 2 rig. So if there's any of you sound nerds out there, you'll kind of understand how awesome that is. But I was just at a leadership presentation last night, and the reason there is so much free music out there is because Mountain Town Music owns all of our production gear. And oftentimes the biggest expense for these concerts is production rental. We pass the savings on to our community partners, like the Silly Market, the Kimball Arts Center, the Latino Arts Festival. We keep music free and accessible for not only our community, but for the people that are programming music for their events. And that's what's really important. And so this new sound system that we just bought, that we just debuted at the Silly Market, is a top-of-the-line sound system. So we have elevated and amplified the audio experience for not only our constituents and the people that listen to music, but also for the bands that are playing music. So I think that that's a really important thing for people to understand, is that we invest heavily in PAs and audio systems so that we can provide the best audio experience for everybody. And that was a tenet that was passed on from Randy Barton. You know, that was really important to Randy, and it's something that he drilled into me when I was younger. And so we have continued to invest into the audio system. So if you come to one of our concerts, we spent a lot of money on that, and we're raising money, and there's been a lot of people that have actually given. So thank you so much if you've given to help us purchase that. But we're going to continue to raise money for that over the summer. And one of the other things that you can do is you can become a Vibe Tribe member, and that is our sustainable member program. And again, Vibe Tribe, we have a ton of Vibe Tribe events. We're taking a bus up to Snow Basin because we program all the music for their Blues and Brews series, which they've added Saturdays. So they're doing every Saturday and Sunday starting this Sunday. We're taking a bus up to see Andy Frasco and Corey Mann on the 22nd. We have a private invite-only event on June 20th at the Prospector Theater for our Vibe Tribe members. We're actually working with 25 local musicians to recreate Tom Petty's Wildflowers album in its entirety, which is one of my all-time favorite albums. And so we have a private event, and we're also raising money that evening for my son Michael's scholarship. So it's an invite-only event for Vibe Tribe members. If you're interested in finding out more, you can either call me at 901-SONG, or you can check out mountaintownmusic.org, click on the donate button or support button, and become a Vibe Tribe member and find out about all the cool events that we got going on that are just for you.
Okay, Brian, hey, appreciate your time. Thank you.
You are the best. Thank you.
Brian Richards is, again, the executive director of Mountain Town Music. You're in the studio now with an update from the Christian Center of Park City. I have executive director Steve Richardson. Good morning, Steve.
Greetings and salutations. How art thou?
Very well, thank you. I didn't have my Shakespeare handy here. The Christian Center celebrating 25 years this year. Any special plans?
Oh, yes. We are so excited about celebrating our 25th year. We're going to be doing it during Hike for Hunger. So September 6th is Hike for Hunger. We're going to have a banquet. We're hoping to have a lecture beforehand, the day before, and so have a three-day celebration. And the goal is not just to celebrate the lives that have been transformed over the last 25 years, but to set a vision and to be able to sustain and make sure we can still transform lives in the next 25 years.
Okay, we'll save the date then for that, and we'll talk more in the months to
Absolutely.
Come.
Absolutely.
All right, the Christian Center, also one of the beneficiaries of the Sunset at Sunrise chair auction. This is happening 3:00 at Canyons Village on Wednesday. So tell us about the chair that your artist has designed.
So our artist designed a chair mostly about birds. You know, that's her specialty. And so I finally got to see it yesterday. Absolutely beautiful. The neat thing is that they're auctioning off these chairs, and 100% of the proceeds of each chair goes to the particular charity. And so there's a few different charities that are going to be able to benefit from this. But anybody who bids on our chair, that money actually goes to the Christian Center. So we're excited about that. We're excited to be a part of the event up in Canyons, and hopefully be able to see somebody go away with a really cool ski lift chair, but also be able to do some good with that money.
Great. And I have seen a back-to-school basics box at a local business. So those are up and out, huh?
They are. We have so many. We have more kids signed up right now than, of course, ever have before. It's almost a broken record at this point, that there's always more need every single year. And so I think we have close to 1,700 kids. The problem, of course, is that we don't have enough money and we don't have enough goods for 1,700 kids. So we're kind of going on the belief that we'll be able to raise it, we'll be able to get it going. We believe in education, and so many people around here do. And yet we know that there are so many kids in needs who don't have backpack or school supplies. And to be able to provide them with a backpack, provide them with the school supplies, but also to give them one of the coolest things is that gift card to the outlet mall. They have to spend it that day on school supplies, specifically clothes. And of course, going to Summit Exchange will make that money go a whole lot farther. But we want kids to be able to have a choice. And it's about having that dignity, that value, that belief that I'm walking into the school and I'm not embarrassed by the way I look. I'm able to really focus on my education. And so this is our opportunity to be able to help out kids in their education, especially those in need in our community, and to try to do some really good things for them.
So what are you asking people to drop in those boxes?
So it's to drop in the basket or the boxes is backpacks and school supplies. So we have lists on the website. We should have lists on the boxes. They can see exactly the kind of things that we need for each one of those kids. And we're going to pack them up and help each kid out. And then the donation, it cost about $130 per kid with a backpack if they were just to buy it rather than donate it. So that's another way to go about it.
Okay. Let's see, you're about to double the size of your store in Heber City. So what, the tenant next door moved out?
They did. The tenant next door moved out. We're going to be renovating over the next month and a half or so. And so we're expecting the middle of July. A lot of people haven't seen the store at Heber City, you know, in Heber City. We have a pantry and a thrift store. We're trying to expand our presence there and make sure we're able to care for those in need. And so this gives us more of an opportunity to care for those in need throughout Heber City. But to double our space, to have more rec gear there, to have more furniture there, to have more clothing there, we want people to make the whole circuit. You know, we've got four stores total, the Summit Exchange, the boutique, the thrift store that's right next to the boutique, and then the Heber store. And they're all a little bit different. And so we're hoping to be able to capitalize on that and be able to expand our reach and expand our care throughout the Heber Valley.
All right. So how do you guys decide what stays in Park City and then what goes to Heber City? Or is it just the stuff that's collected at each location?
So Heber City does have its own receiving, and everything that's donated in Heber City stays in Heber City. Heber City is also a little more of everyday items. So you look at the boutique, and it's more of the high-class items, the really high name brand things that are generally for everyday wear or, you know, special wear. A lot of those are at the boutique. You have a thrift store that's more on the everyday items right next to the boutique. We have the Summit Exchange that has a lot of the high-class items, but a lot of the rec gear and a lot of the exercise clothes and so. And then Heber, we are gearing more toward the real value items that have a lot of good that people can go in there and think, wow, I just got $10 worth of clothing and I did a huge, huge deal. And so to be able to make sure we're giving back to the community in that way, along with raising money for our programs that are so important to the community.
Yeah. So do you have furniture in Heber?
We do.
And then what about the other stores?
So Summit Exchange also has furniture and a little bit of furniture at the boutique. So if you're looking for a couch, you're looking for an end table, most likely you're going to find it at Summit Exchange in Heber. You're looking for clothes, you'll find it every single one of them.
Okay. Anything you don't want people to donate?
So generally used underwear. Okay, those are obvious. We did get toys, and those didn't work real well. We've had mattresses donated at times that are a little bit too soiled. And generally, we don't accept mattresses or undergarments, you know, anything that's broken, anything that we can't give away to somebody. A lot of things we give directly to people, or we give to the Valley, or we give to our individuals here, or that we try to sell and then use that money for the pantry or for the programs. But if it has no value at all, if it's broken and there's no way we can fix it, it's just causing us more problems.
It's garbage,
yeah.
At that point. Let's see, you've hired a new director of programs.
We have. So Eli Shekelford has been in the area for about 14 years. He's been doing a lot of stuff down in the Valley with a lot of different nonprofits, and he's also been a pastor of a church there and involved in so many different organizations. And so I wanted somebody who had an entrepreneurial spirit and a true caregiver's heart and a friendliness that you just can't bottle. And so I wanted to mention it. I'll bring him in a future date, but the guy is so nice and so friendly and so caring and so loving. So I encourage our listeners, if you have a chance to stop by the Christian Center, you have a chance to email Eli, you will love getting to know him.
Okay, and the Counseling Center, Leah Harder is stepping down.
She is, the 24th of June. We are in the midst of finding her replacement, and so we're almost there. But she is stepping down from the administrative duties, but not stepping down from her primary duties of counseling. And so that's been kind of the challenge, is we're replacing her administrative duties, but we don't have to replace her as a counselor because she's staying with us. She's still working full time. In fact, she'll be able to work probably more because she doesn't have to focus on the administrative duties and can focus on her passion, her love. She's been doing the admin for the counseling center for the last 13 years. It's time to care for people. Okay. And that's her love. That's what she's doing.
All right. Anything else you want to mention?
I am just so thankful to be here in this community, and I thank you guys for the love that you've shown the Christian Center and the great support, and we encourage you to come out for the 25th anniversary all year long, but especially September 6th.
Okay, Steve, thanks.